This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Biomega Fish Oil from Biotics Research. For over 40 years, Biotics Research has been providing the highest quality supplements, surpassing industry standards. Biomega Fish Oil contains therapeutic doses of vital omega-3s in the triglyceride form, which is highly bioavailable. Biotics Research ensures maximum purity and freshness by managing their fish oils from catch to capsule, verified by rigorous independent testing. For more information, go to drhoffman.com/biotics research. That's drhoffman.com/biotics research for Biomega Fish Oil. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla. And as I looked at the calendar and I said, wow, today I get to do Q&A with Layla. I said, that's going to be a good day. You know, it's kind of like demarcates the murky progression of the week as our routines are disrupted by COVID-19. It's always kind of a high point of my week when I get to have a conversation with my partner in crime and nutritionist in residence, Layla Mutin. This comes to us amidst kind of a scary week. It's actually been kind of a scary week in terms of COVID-19 because as much as we feel that we've weathered the storm, there's been some blowback this week. And, you know, actually, I'll quote from my own newsletter article here. This is what I wrote this week. COVID-19 pessimists feel vindicated this month as cases surge in parts of the U.S. that thought they dodged the coronavirus bullet. The baseball season is in doubt when the entire team is quarantining and out of action. Dr. Fauci announced it's, quote, impossible to predict how long the pandemic will last, and even issued a call for face shields.
Wow.
A prominent conservative, Herman Cain, who was seen without a mask at a Trump rally, died of COVID-19. And a surprisingly high prevalence of heart disease complications was found in survivors of COVID-19, even of people who had relatively mild infections. And teachers are threatening to strike if forced to return to unsafe schools next month. So we're kind of at an inflection point in the pandemic. We thought, you know, who'd have predicted that we'd be here? We're moving towards Labor Day. The summer, the official summer is almost over, and yet we're in the midst of it. However, here from the vantage point of New York City, things seem to be quite a lot better. In fact, you know, I'm going out to dinner with a friend of mine, you know, after this, hurricane blows over, Hurricane I can't even pronounce it.
I can't pronounce it either. I was going to ask you how to pronounce that.
Isaias, you know, is bearing down on New York as we record this. And tomorrow should be nice weather. So we're actually going to one of those outdoor restaurants, which really are a delight.
Yes.
You know, I don't know if you had the experience of going out to eat in the streets of Manhattan, but they're literally teeming with people. The restaurants are full. There's a kind of a celebratory atmosphere. People are masking and social distancing, but there's some encouraging signs that life is returning to normal. How are you doing? What are you doing to sustain yourself during the pandemic?
Yeah.
How are you keeping healthy? Because we know, you know, it's important to do all the things that, you know, those lifestyle things that keep us fit and keep us, you know, metabolically optimized during this time. What are you doing?
I've been spending a lot more time out east as we're building our house, which is coming along nicely. But amidst all of that, we planted a garden. And we are now reaping the harvest. It is just wonderful. We've got, you know, the regular cucumbers and Kirby's. We're still waiting on tomatoes. We've had radishes, zucchini, we have various lettuces, we have arugula, red leaf lettuce, green Simpson lettuce,
and even really a little purslane is showing up. More fresh vegetables that are, of course, organic because you know what goes into them, into the soil, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, and of course, we're not spraying them with anything. Mm-hmm. And we're enjoying seeing more dragonflies and bees and all those wonderful pollinators mm-hmm. that we see around. So it's nice to just kind of sit in the garden and look at all this and say, oh, look, here's more zucchini that we'll have for dinner tonight. And here's a salad I can throw together. And basically, the only time to go to the market is to get some protein. Mm-hmm. Or so, some animal protein, some organic chicken or a steak.
You're not becoming a vegan on me, are you?
Oh, no. Okay. Oh, no. I was always a big vegetable and fruit eater, and there it is. Hopefully, we'll see some berries soon. We had a few. Mm-hmm. We had transplanted a raspberry bush when we had first started excavating, and we'll see how it does. Mm-hmm. But it's been great. And, you know, we're in a beach community, so the beach is a 2.5-minute walk down the road.
Mm-hmm. What are you doing on the exercise front?
Yeah, a lot of walking, mm-hmm. yoga, which is a mainstay of mine, yoga mm-hmm. and strength training, but a lot of walking.
How do you do the strength training? Because we can't get to gyms, you know, there's no machines, you know.
I haven't belonged to a gym in over a decade.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to pay for that,
right?
Number one.
So you're doing isometric exercises?
No, it's basically I will do floor exercises, I will do yoga, I will mm-hmm. exercise outdoors mm-hmm. for aerobics. I was a big fan of the step. I used to own a whole lot of VHS videos on step aerobics
right.
and things like that, which I'm obviously not watching anymore, and I don't have the step anymore. Can't find it, actually, but mm-hmm. That way, you know. And I tell many... a lot of folks who just don't want to exercise, don't want to join a gym, you don't have to. And guess what? If you just get up 3 mornings a week, not mm-hmm. not consecutive mornings, but every other day, mm-hmm. do some push-ups, do some sit-ups, mm-hmm. Not sit-ups, but more plank. Do some push-ups, mm-hmm. do some squats and lunges and core exercises like plank,
mm-hmm.
and things like that. And you do this 3 days a week, you don't even need a pair of sneakers. You don't even need a cute gym outfit. You do this all in the privacy of your home. Mm-hmm. There it is.
But those fashion statements are so much fun. You know, I really look forward to buying a new pair of sneakers even before I need them sometimes. So what I'm doing is, I'm not as successful as you are with the garden. I have an herb garden. Which is yielding fresh herbs. So I.
Lovely.
Have oregano, and I have thyme, and I have rosemary, and some parsley, and some tarragon, and mm-hmm. All those ingredients are nice to, you know, early in the season. We've got lots of chives. Chives mm-hmm. are coming in, but they tend to burn out later in the summer. Dill, and amazingly. This is the first time I've been successful at growing. This is a little inky-dinky patch. I thought you'd required a lot of room to grow zucchini. But the zucchinis are amazing because in the morning, it's like, oh, that's not big enough. It's like by afternoon, they're like big enough.
Oh, my God. It's the same with the Kirby's. Fast. My husband would tell me, you better watch that Kirby because by tomorrow morning, it's going to be too big.
Yeah. It's wild.
You want them at pickle size
for
the most beautiful flavor.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, those fresh cucumber little ones, the Kirby's are really good because we're used to this big supermarket variety, the big heavy ones. Mm-hmm. The little ones are really nice.
Yeah.
So I'm doing that. And then, I sort of I had an opportunity to diversify my exercise portfolio because with the lockdown, my gym was closed. Now, I live in Manhattan right adjacent to YMCA, which really has been my saving grace for, 20 plus years. I've been a regular denizen of the Y, kind of a gym rat. And, I work out in the machines and I have a personal trainer there and I work out in the pool and I do spin classes. And of course, that's great during the winter, but, I was, anxious for the cold weather to abate. We had kind of a cold spring. And then, I decided to, try out my running again because, as I revealed in a newsletter article, I had a bit of a setback. I, developed knee pain. And I waited and I waited and I waited. And finally, I got an MRI, and the MRI said I had a torn meniscus. Womp, womp. You know, it's like, oh, man, that's the end of my running career.
Bummer.
And then I finally just said, look, stop being your own doctor. Go see like a top knee specialist, a guy who really does sports medicine. This guy does the U.S. Olympic ski team at Hospital for Special Surgery. So I said, let me avail myself of that. Went to see the guy. The guy said, hey, you know something? This is an easy fix. I could just go in there in 5 minutes. I can fix this. You know, and I said, well, you know, surgeons tend to be, have a lot of bravado, you know, and, you know, I thought, well, I mean, but then I said, look, well, you know, what do I have to lose? Cause, you know, it's really a drag not being able to run. And, that was in October and, you know, he predicted that I start running in like, 3-4 weeks. Well, no, that's certainly not the case, but the lockdown forced me to, test my sea legs, so to speak, to start running again, because there was no other outlet for me. And I was sitting at home, you know, I was doing those, so like you, yoga, boring push-ups, and I had these stretchy bands. And I just got tired of that. I was doing a lot of walking, but so I started running, and lo and behold, I was able to run again. So now I'm running a couple of times a week. I'm trying to, you know, ease into
terrific.
It. But I worked my way through my first pair of post-operative sneakers, so that means I put a lot of mileage on them. They're, you know, looking kind of worn out. I probably put, you know, a couple hundred miles on them. And I'm able to cycle because it's warm. And I don't cycle in the city since I broke my hip a few years back in a bicycle accident. So I, you know, stick to the roads out in the country. And I've, you know, done a few hundred miles already of cycling this summer. And then I swim. And I swim in the Long Island Sound.
Yeah,
Where the sharks don't come. Where the sharks don't come. Never been a shark. The sharks,
wait, did you say Long Island Sound?
Not Long Island Sound. Sorry.
Yeah, because that's where they kind of are too. Okay.
No.
Oh no, it was the ocean. Right.
It's salt water, but it's the bay. It's a bay.
It's the bay. Yes.
Yeah. So it tends
there won't
to be
any sharks there.
It's flatter. You know, there's less waves, and it's a really beautiful way to work out. You know, I just love it. You know, I'm going to try and extend the season as long as I can. Usually, I can swim into October. You know, I might get a wetsuit so that I can swim a little longer. So I've managed to kind of replicate my, you know, by being resourceful, replicate my exercise regimen. The one thing I'm going to do is I think I'm going to call my personal trainer and see if he can meet me in the park. And maybe we can do some stuff because I kind of miss the workouts. He used to put
great.
Me through the paces. And he's had to adapt because he can't go to a gym or a facility. You know, I'm sure he'd be
glad. He could do it virtually.
We could do it virtually, but, you know, I'd like to see him in person, and, you know, I'm sure he's going to bring all kinds of torture devices, you know, stretch bands and various apparatuses, and he's got some ways that he can, you know, get me to challenge myself, and, you know, usually after workout with him, I'm sore in ways that I never thought I could be sore.
You know? Wow. Okay.
So, you know, that's kind of what we're doing, and, you know, we're trying to. And a lot of articles just so many articles that talk about how important it is to maintain fitness in the face of COVID-19, because barring a vaccine, the, you know, questionable efficacy of masks, which is a whole other controversy, you know, I think it behooves us to stay as fit as we can and use this as an opportunity to get our house in order, so to speak, health-wise. And, you know, many articles. There was actually an article in CNN recently about a call to action to get fit, and how Americans' diet was really one of the factors that render us more susceptible to COVID-19.
Right. I mean, we can't control the virus, so we have to focus on the things that we can control: how we eat, how we move, how we are in our lives. Our reactions to things. I'm alluding to stress now. Things like that we can control. Well, so make sure you get enough sleep, plenty of sunshine, exercise, eat good food. And it's such a joy to go out to the garden and snip and pull and tug on what I'm going to eat today.
Yeah, it's very gratifying because it's putting you directly in touch with nature, but also there's much more immediacy than, you know, looking at something in a cellophane package that's been sitting there for God knows how long, you know, when you grow it yourself. I think there's a placebo effect. You know, I think it's like, you know, it's when you grow it and you eat it and it's, you know, you've made it yourself. It's like cooking for yourself, you know.
Yes. It's self-nurture. Yeah. And if ever there was a time or a need for self-nurture, you know, this is the time.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You're obviously adapting very well to this. Unfortunately, I think there's some people who are having some real challenges, you know, because of just life circumstances, jobs, yeah. and so on. We're doing some telemedicine, which is a workaround for, you know, not going to the office. Obviously, today we didn't go into the office because it's a big, big storm in New York. And thank yeah. goodness nobody was. Yeah, I was just hoping there wouldn't be like one crazy determined patient who said, yeah, I want to see you in right. the office today. It's like, did you check the weather 60 report?
60 mile an hour winds outside. Right. I don't know.
So thankfully, you know, our only visits were on telemedicine.
Yes.
Via
yes.
phone calls. So mm-hmm. that's working out. Hey, you know, okay, there's life after COVID-19, and hopefully right. normalcy will resume. Let's get to questions. Radioprogram@AOL.com is the destination for questions. Please keep sending us your questions, and there have been some great ones. Let's tackle some of those right now.
Okay, we've got one from Rachel. Hi, Dr. Hoffman. What is your opinion about benfotiamine for insulin resistance compared to others like chromium or alpha-lipoic acid or biotin? And will benfotiamine raise blood pressure?
Hmm.
Now, I've not seen anything about benfotiamine, which is thiamine or a particular formulation of vitamin B1, which mm-hmm. is thiamine, which is very beneficial for peripheral neuropathies, especially mm-hmm. in those with blood sugar issues, with diabetes, mm-hmm. things like that. So I think it's beneficial for those. I know I've recommended it
yeah.
to our patients with any of those types of issues.
However, I don't know that it has an impact on blood sugar.
Hmm. I don't think that it does.
But it mitigates yeah. the side effects of high
it
blood sugar.
It mitigates the side effects of right. the high blood sugar. So that could be something.
So we put our type 1 diabetics on benfotiamine because they're the people who, you know, 20, 30, 40 years of insulin usage, and, you know, they might get their hemoglobin A1C down to 7, but still they're going to be experiencing some stress to their nerves. And
yeah.
benfotiamine might help protect the nerves, and obviously the brain is a nerve, so yeah, maybe mm-hmm. benefits there.
Yeah, so that's helpful that way. Take benfotiamine, not necessarily, Rachel, for insulin resistance, but for any peripheral neuropathies that may be present, you know, that pain of, you know, pins and needles or tingling numbness in fingers, toes, hands, feet, legs, arms, that kind of a thing.
I had some of that the other day, and then I realized what it was is from pedaling on my bicycle, putting pressure on the nerve in my, you know, in the bottom of my foot.
And, it's like a repetitive motion thing.
Yeah, and, you know, I iced it a little bit, and then I rolled it out, you know, with a stiff rubber ball, and, you know, it went away. It wasn't diabetes.
yeah. good. But, you know, other things that are good for insulin resistance, chromium definitely.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Alpha-lipoic acid also for the peripheral neuropathies, for maybe help with the liver.
Mm-hmm.
But other things,
berberine,
yeah. CM core, diaxanol, gymnema.
Yep.
Gymnema more
for pancreatic function. I think it's a little
yes.
bit less for the insulin. I mean, there's two ways you can go wrong with diabetes. One is your pancreas is failing and not producing enough insulin to handle
yeah.
the blood sugar. And that's where gymnema comes in. And then there are the things that help with peripheral resistance to insulin, such as berberine.
Yes. You know,
the drug metformin is designed to work that way.
Mm-hmm.
And
also known as glucophage.
Glucophage, right.
Yeah.
And, you know, even magnesium may actually help with that.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
So, and central to insulin resistance would be a low-carb diet.
Yes. Yeah.
And you add those wonderful supplements to all of that, you've basically got the complete package for
yep.
how to deal with insulin resistance.
One of the patients we talked to today, she, you know, has had a hemoglobin A1C of 6.1, which
yes.
is a little bit considered pre-diabetes. And we were happy to see today that it went down to 5.8. And
yeah.
She did, however, admit to some stress eating and some
sure.
baking. Baking is a problem.
Right.
Those chocolate chip cookies will get you every time.
Oh, totally. But they
do relieve COVID-19 stress, but
right. You know, sometimes broccoli just doesn't cut it for relieving the COVID-19 stress of being in lockdown or worrying, whether it's about your health, your finances, or all of the above.
In this case, I think it was the grandchild. It was like this is a person who's separated from her grandchild by the grandchild's on the West Coast. She's on the East Coast, and she's, you know, obviously concerned about flying. But that's happening to so many families because of dispersal. You know, grandparents can't see their grandkids. You know, mm-hmm. it's really a bummer. Yeah. Anyway.
This too shall pass.
Yes, hopefully.
God will. Yeah.
Yeah. They'll be there for their college graduation and weddings. For sure.
I predict. I'm more of an optimist than that. Okay.
next question, please.
Next question we have from Lori, longtime follower here. The more I read and listen, the more confused I get about what to eat. I feel like I need a PhD when I go to the grocery store and supplement aisle. I don't know if I'm getting enough of this.
Here's a comment. A PhD won't help you because there are so many people who are the most illustrious nutritional scientists, PhDs, mm-hmm. with multiple graduate credentials who still can't figure it out. And they debate each other ferociously about what's the best diet.
Yeah.
So in this case, knowledge is power to some extent, but knowledge is also sometimes just puts you into this everlasting controversy about what's the best diet.
Yeah. Well, I think that the controversy is wrong. It shouldn't be what's the best diet for humanity because everybody's different.
Thank you.
It has to be individualized. And what I would recommend for Lori is, what are your needs? What is your height and weight? What are your particular complaints or medical conditions or symptoms? What is going on with you? And a really thorough workup by a nutritionally oriented practitioner can help elucidate what it is that you should be eating, what supplements you should be taking, and for what reason. And, you know, you could really go into the weeds if you wish to with mechanisms of action and how you would benefit by eating a certain way or taking certain supplements or moving a certain way. I mean, this is all stuff to dive into on an individual basis because nobody can dictate, say, this is the best diet for humanity.
Mm-hmm. And it really is controversial because what's making it worse is there's, I think, social media is making it worse because there are people who are vegans and they're just proudly there, you know, like just, you know, with their shirts off, you know, proudly showing their, you know, pectoral muscles and showing how great they're doing on this vegan diet. Mm-hmm. And then you could do a 180, and then there are the people who are absolute carnivores. They eat nothing but meat. They don't even eat any vegetables. They don't need your vegetable garden. They're just eating meat, meat, and fat. And they claim that this is the, you know, pathway to salvation. And so that makes it even more confusing because of this. Yeah. It's like the political polarization. It's like we're conversing by shouting at each other in, you know, 140 character tweets about, you know, which is superior. There's like the diet wars, in some ways. I know you're not on Twitter, but the diet wars have assumed the tenor of like a political debate, you know, with body shaming and, you know, accusations and name calling. it's pretty wild.
It is pretty wild. So, you know, it's nobody can dictate the best diet for you or for me without a deep look into us as our individual biochemistries and how we're doing, and all of that has to be taken into consideration.
I believe
that's the only way to do it intelligently.
Yeah, no, I agree. But one clue is, let's look at the ancestral diets. Let's look at paleo concepts, because really that's closer to what nature and biology dictates are suitable foods for humans. Now, that varies all over the all over the board, because if you look at so-called primitive societies, they range from societies that consume fairly minimal amounts of animal protein, although virtually all primitive societies consume animal protein. There are no primitive societies that are vegan.
Yes,
I'm going to say that categorically. They may consume less in the way of animal protein, but then there are tribes like the Inuit, you know, mm-hmm. who live in northern climes where there's very little vegetation, and the only vegetation that they obtain is actually from the stomach contents of their prey. You know, when you kill a seal or something, you know, maybe you're mm-hmm. going to eat some grass or something that the seal consume, or, you know.
But otherwise, you're having blubber. Yeah.
Yeah, right. You know, that's their sauerkraut is the stomach contents of animals that they consume. And then they get some vegetable matter in that way. But it's a wonderful question. The other thing I'll point out is that I worry a little that all this discussion about food and diet that we certainly are part of that conversation, can promote something called orthorexia, which is an obsessive concern for what you put in your mouth.
And it's the obsessive concern with eating correctly all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That can't be good for the soul.
No.
These individuals back themselves into a corner mm-hmm. where they find, oh, wow, there's really nothing left to eat except for my grilled chicken and my salad and my pear and my broccoli and my almonds and very little else. Mm-hmm. Not so.
And then couple that with the high prevalence of eating disorders.
Yeah.
And you have people who are sort of neurotically obsessed with eating a certain way, even fasting, which has mm-hmm. benefits. But then sometimes there's a psychological overlay of people who are quasi-anorexic. Or alternatively, who deprive themselves and then binge, and we don't mm-hmm. want to push people in that direction either. So
no, that's terrible for digestion and everything else.
Yeah, and by the way,
that erratically.
Your profession, and you know, present company excluded, unfortunately, is rife with people who are orthorexic. I will say that is that among
true.
RDs and professional nutritionists.
Yeah,
there are some people who are grappling with eating disorders, frankly. And
there were a handful of them. I remember in my undergrad classes that were absolute classical eating disorder. It's a little bit like physician heal thyself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the person becomes a doctor so they can heal themselves. I think it's the same for nutritionists.
Well, or psychiatrists. Psychiatrist or
to
psychologist
vindicate
heal
themselves
thyself.
That their eating disorder is correct, mm-hmm. maybe.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, it's like they're looking for the proof that what they're doing is right, or maybe really they are trying to heal themselves mm-hmm. by learning more. But, you know, sometimes it's not about intellect.
Yeah. Yeah. Intellect is not the tool sometimes
right.
that guides us to always the best and correct life decisions. It informs those life decisions, but sometimes it's just a matter of, a balanced attitude towards living.
It's like that person who screams, but I know that, but why do I still feel this way if I know that? Well, that it's got to take the elevator down from your head to the rest of you.
Right.
To really get it. And that could take a little bit of work. Yeah.
Right. We're not just cerebral beings.
Right.
Okay. Well, all right. So, I mean, a general discussion, but the answer is, I think, as you stated, let's customize nutrition for people's individual circumstances.
Yeah.
And also, let's be humble to our nutritional knowledge, because as we can see, when we look at, I mean, I read the pages of the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition every month, and, mm-hmm. I glean every bit of information I can from it. And
yes.
And it's a little frustrating because so much of what we're seeing in the world of nutrition is controversy. And articles point to one conclusion and then there's pushback. And that's the way that science advances. There is no mm-hmm. settled science when it comes to diet. We're far from it.
Yeah. That's true.
I mean, I just read an article about dairy, And I said, well, uh-huh. finally, the answer is dairy healthy. And it uh-huh. was like, well, it on the one hand, this, and on the other hand, that, and that, you know, it depends on their circumstances and you know.
Right, right. I think what's what there has to be a discussion and a very respectful and knowledgeable debate from all sides, number one. What I don't like, and I think that's part of a lot of what takes place on social media, which is why I don't participate, is a whole lot of groupthink.
Yep, yep.
You know, you're either vegan or you're against, oh, I don't know, pick the controversy of the day.
It's tribal. It's tribal.
Or pick the virtue of the day.
Yeah, no, it's know? Tribal. It's tribal.
It's tribal.
Yeah, you know, it's like, yeah. I'm rooting for this or I'm again it. All right, yeah. Let's pause because we divide our podcast into two parts, at least theoretically. We've gone a little long for part one. What can we expect to hear from in part two? Give us a preview.
Well, wouldn't we as adults, by exposing ourselves to some of the COVID-19, help deprive our immune systems to become stronger against it?
What a wonderful, wonderful question. Let's tackle that in part two. That'll prime a great discussion. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Leila Mudin, our nutritionist in residence. Radio program at AOL.com is a place where you can send questions to get in on the discussion. We encourage emails to radioprogram at AOL.com. We'll be right back with more of today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast.